This is VOA News. I'm Richard Green. U.S. President Joe Biden on Wednesday explained his abrupt departure from the 2024 presidential race to Americans in a nationally televised address from the White House.
Nothing can come in the way of saving our democracy. That includes personal ambition. So I've decided the best way forward is to pass the torch to a new generation.
The 81-year-old Biden ended his campaign Sunday after rejecting weeks of pressure from fellow Democrats to step aside after disastrous debate performance on June 27th. His performance raised alarms among the party that Biden's frail appearance confirmed voters' doubts that he could serve a second term and could lead to massive losses in both the House and Senate in the November elections. The woman whom Biden has endorsed to replace him at the top of the Democratic ticket was on the campaign trail Wednesday. Vice President Kamala Harris spoke before members of the African-American sorority Zeta Phi Beta in Indianapolis, telling audience the voters have a serious decision to make in November.
I believe we face a choice between two different visions for our nation. One focused on the future, the other focused on the past. And with your support, I am fighting for our nation's future.
Democrats are poised to formally nominate Harris and her running mate by early next month. AP correspondent Lisa Dwyer explains.
The convention's Rules Committee has approved a proposal where delegates from around the country will be able to vote on potential presidential candidates to replace President Joe Biden, who abandoned his re-election bid last weekend. Harris is the only major Democrat to announce publicly that she's seeking the nomination. That means that she'll likely be approved in balloting beginning August 1st, 18 days before the party's convention opens in Chicago. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
This is VOA News. Former President Donald Trump turned his attention towards Vice President Harris during a campaign rally in Charlotte, North Carolina, Wednesday.
So now we have a new victim to defeat, Lion Kamala Harris. Lion, L-Y-I-N apostrophe. The most incompetent and far-left vice president in American history.
The Republican nominee attacked Harris over the Biden administration's immigration policies. The rally was Trump's first public campaign event since Biden dropped out of the expected rematch of the 2020 contest. A senior U.S. official said Wednesday negotiations on a ceasefire for hostages deal in the Gaza conflict appeared to be in their closing stages as President Biden and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will meet Thursday to discuss any remaining gaps. Crowds gathered around a mud pit containing dead bodies on Wednesday as volunteers dug for survivors of landslides that have killed 229 people and displaced thousands more in southern Ethiopia. Humanitarian agencies scrambled to rush emergency relief aid to the stricken community after the deadliest such incident recorded in Ethiopia. A United Nations official told AFP that around 14,000 affected people, including children and pregnant women, need to be evacuated immediately because of the risk of further landslides in the remote area. Images broadcast on regional state television showed residents using shovels and bare hands to dig through vast mounds of reddish mud. The Nigerian government held an emergency meeting Wednesday in response to planned nationwide protests over governance issues and the cost of living. Timothy Obezu reports from Abuja.
Wednesday's emergency meeting comes a day after President Bola Tinubu made a public appeal through his information minister, Mohammed Idris Malagi, asking citizens not to go through with planned protests. More than 40 cabinet members attended the meeting, including the secretary to the government, the national security advisor, and ministers. Malagi told journalists after the meeting that authorities are working hard to address the grievances of the people, but that the government will need more time. Timothy Obizu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Issues in the News is VOA's premier news discussion program. We take on the biggest stories of the week and discuss them in detail with those who have unparalleled expertise. Our in-depth analysis goes beyond the headlines, providing you with the inside story on both domestic and international news. I'm Richard Green for VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. President Joe Biden addresses the nation and explains his reasons for not running for re-election.
The great thing about America is here, kings and dictators do not rule. The people do. History is in your hands. The power is in your hands. The idea of America lies in your hands.
We also have an analysis of the president's speech. Former President Trump's campaign is recalibrating its approach to take on Vice President Kamala Harris. Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu seeks the support of the U.S. Congress in his war against Hamas. We'll examine the Sudan conflict as the U.S. announces no ceasefire talks. Nigerian authorities hold an emergency meeting on planned anti-government protests.
The young people out there should listen to the president and allow the president more time to see to the realization of all the goodies he has for them.
Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. President Joe Biden addressed the nation on Wednesday night for the first time since withdrawing from the 2024 presidential campaign and endorsing Vice President Kamala Harris as a Democratic Party candidate in the 2024 election. He highlighted his administration's achievements and called on Americans to defend democracy.
In just a few months, the American people will choose the course of America's future. I made my choice. I made my views known. I'd like to thank our great Vice President Kamala Harris. She's experienced, she's tough, she's capable. She's been an incredible partner to me and a leader for our country. Now the choice is up to you, the American people. When you make that choice, remember the words of Benjamin Franklin's hanging on my wall here in the Oval Office, alongside the busts of Dr. King and Rosa Parks and Cesar Chavez. When Ben Franklin was asked whether the founders have given America a monarchy or a republic, Franklin's response was, a republic, if you can keep it. A republic, if you can keep it. Whether we keep our republic is now in your hands. My fellow Americans, it's been the privilege of my life to serve this nation for over 50 years. Nowhere else on earth could a kid with a stutter from modest beginnings in Scranton, Pennsylvania, Claymont, Delaware, one day sit behind the resolute desk in the Oval Office as President of the United States. But here I am. That's what's so special about America. We're a nation of promise and possibilities, of dreamers and doers, of ordinary Americans doing extraordinary things. I've given my heart and my soul to our nation, like so many others. I've been blessed a million times in return with the love and support of the American people. I hope you have some idea how grateful I am to all of you. The great thing about America is here, kings and dictators do not rule. The people do. History is in your hands. The power is in your hands. The idea of America lies in your hands. We just have to keep faith. Keep the faith. And remember who we are. We're the United States of America. And there's simply nothing, nothing beyond our capacity when we do it together.
President Joe Biden addressing the nation Wednesday night from the Oval Office. Pearl Matibe is a Zimbabwe-born journalist and foreign policy analyst. I asked her earlier what she thought about the president's speech.
As I reflect on President Biden's speech, knowing the kind of man that he is, one aspect that truly stands out is his profound trust in the American people. It's clear that while he has laid out a comprehensive vision and made this decisive action, he is ultimately empowering the American people, the citizens of the United States, to shape their own future, the future of their own country. This approach not only demonstrates his own deep belief in democratic principles, but also his confidence in the American people's collective strength and their resilience. Because, you know, President Biden's leadership, the way that he has been viewed over the last more than five decades, is about making informed decisions. And when you hear him speak, President Biden really believes in the things that he says, and then entrusting the American people to carry the mantle. He's passing on the baton. This is, what can I say, a stellar example of the legacy he wants to leave. That is, he intends, this was intentional, he intends to inspire, he intends to unite, and he is acknowledging that the power to enact the change that he believes America needs lies with each and every single American, and he's pointing to each and every American going to ballot box.
Per listening to the president also, I think he was also highlighting some of the achievements of his administration.
Indeed, there's a number of things that he talked about, which I thought were quite important, right? So we can run through a few of them. Number one, the healthcare expansion. There was this lowering prescription drug costs. This is an issue that's very close to his heart. As I've been saying, he talked about a stronger NATO and Ukraine's resilience against Russia. Biden here was emphasizing, you know, trying to strengthen NATO and the importance of sovereignty, of territorial integrity, which they've been reiterating for a while. This historic Supreme Court appointment, this was the appointment of the first black woman to the Supreme Court, which is a landmark achievement in promoting what he wanted to do. He kept saying he wanted his administration to look like what America looks like.
Per, thank you so much again. A pleasure to speak with you as usual.
You're welcome.
That's a Zimbabwe-born journalist and foreign policy analyst Per Matibe. In the U.S. presidential campaign, Republican candidate Donald Trump is facing a new opponent after President Joe Biden's withdrawal as his party's presumptive nominee. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns looks at how Trump's campaign is recalibrating its approach to take on Vice President Kamala Harris.
Republicans at last week's national convention saw the mounting pressure on President Joe Biden to step down as his party's presumptive candidate. So when he did, they were ready.
If you ever wondered how Joe Biden could get the border so screwed up, remember, he had help.
With this ad, pivoting from Biden to Vice President Kamala Harris and blaming her for a surge of illegal immigration.
I've been working on this issue for a very long time.
That's the truth about Kamala Harris. She's dangerously liberal on illegal immigration.
In her first campaign event as the Democrats' likely presidential candidate, Harris was ready with a counterattack, reminding voters of her work as a courtroom prosecutor and attorney general.
And in those roles, I took on perpetrators of all kinds. Predators who abused women. Fraudsters who ripped off consumers. Cheaters who broke the rules for their own gain. So hear me when I say, I know Donald Trump's type.
Harris resets a race that former President Donald Trump was leading, says Brookings Institution governmental studies expert Daryl West.
She'll be very competitive in those crucial Midwestern states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. And I think she also will put some of those other swing states that have started to slip away, places like Arizona, back in very strong contention for Democrats.
For Republican nominee Trump, a new political challenger means a new derisive nickname.
I call her Laughing Kamala. You ever watch her laugh? She's crazy. You know, you can tell a lot by her laugh. No, she's crazy. She's nuts.
It's a campaign confident in beating any Democrat, says Hofstra University's Mina Bose.
Clearly, former President Trump and his campaign staff thought that President Biden was a beatable candidate. They seem to have the same views of Vice President Harris.
The change will mean some adjustments for Republicans, says West.
They're just going to have to recast the whole thrust of their campaign, which was saying Joe Biden was too old, he couldn't do the job, his family was corrupt. All that disappears now. But I'm sure they will quickly go on the attack. They will note that she came out of the state of California, which is more liberal than the rest of the country.
Trump running mate J.D. Vance has taken up that attack, blaming Vice President Harris for Biden's poor performance.
Our country has been saddled for 3.5 years with a president who cannot do the job. And that is all because Kamala Harris and the rest of the Democrats lied about his ability to be our president.
Harris says voters have a clear choice between her vision and Trump's.
Do we want to live in a country of freedom, compassion, and rule of law, or a country of chaos, fear, and hate. And here's the beauty of this moment. We each have the power to answer that question. The power is with the people.
Initial political polling since Biden's withdrawal shows Harris narrowing her party's gap with Trump. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke Wednesday to a joint session of the U.S. Congress as protesters called for a ceasefire in the Israel-Gaza conflict and the release of the hostages. But Netanyahu defended the war and criticized the protesters.
My friends, defeating our brutal enemies requires both courage and clarity. Clarity begins by knowing the difference between good and evil. Yet incredibly, many anti-Israel protesters, many choose to stand with evil. They stand with Hamas. These protesters stand with them. They should be ashamed of themselves. They refuse to make the simple distinction between those who target terrorists and those who target civilians, between the democratic state of Israel and the terrorist thugs of Hamas. For all we know, Iran is funding the anti-Israel protests that are going on right now outside this building. Not that many, but they're there and throughout the city. Well, I have a message for these protesters. When the tyrants of Tehran, who hang gays from cranes and murder women for not covering their hair, are praising, promoting, and funding you, you have officially become Iran's useful idiots.
That's Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu speaking Wednesday to a joint session of the U.S. Congress. As Benjamin Netanyahu addressed both houses of the U.S. Congress on Wednesday, thousands of people protested outside the Capitol, denouncing the Israeli Prime Minister for Israel's war against Hamas. Robin Guest reports from Washington.
Thousands of protesters traveled from several states and many countries to chant and demonstrate against Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Kalim Hawa came from New York City.
The point of our mobilization today is to send a message that Benjamin Netanyahu is a war criminal. He's not welcome in D.C., he's not welcome in the U.S., that Israel has become a pariah state because of the way they have conducted the ongoing genocide of the Palestinian people in Gaza.
Many of the groups are protesting the war in Gaza, the number of Palestinian deaths, and the failure to secure the return home of all the Israeli hostages. Many called for Netanyahu's arrest, accusing him of war crimes. Here's anti-Netanyahu protester Lou Jane Lamasri from Damascus, Syria.
And he's has this the comforts of being invited to the U.S. He should be in handcuffs. He should be in jail, and he should be charged with his crimes and having to pay for his crimes against the Palestinians.
Security outside the Capitol was boosted by reinforcements from the New York City Police Department.
We are committed to liberation!
The groups who organized the larger protests were solidly anti-Netanyahu. However, there were a handful of supporters. Jeremy from Canada gave only his first name.
So I'm on the pro-Israel side, the pro-American side, the pro-Canadian side, the pro-Western value side, and I'm against terrorists who hide beneath their civilians, start wars they can't finish.
They were vastly outnumbered. This pro-Netanyahu protester only goes by Flag Guy.
Well, I'd like to see how he plans on finishing Hamas once and for all, because I think that they are the problem. And then once that's over, we can talk about peaceful solutions.
Opinion polls have shown Americans remain deeply divided over Israel's war with Hamas, with roughly equal numbers who think the U.S. is doing too little to help Palestinians, too much, or just the right amount. Robin Guess, VOA News.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti, Washington. Today is Thursday, July 25th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. after a year of conflict, starvation, and desperation continues to escalate in Sudan. This week, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken asked the Sudanese Armed Forces, the SFF, and the Rapid Support Forces, RSF, to participate in ceasefire talks in August, mediated by the United States. Sama Salma is a Sudanese strategic analyst and the president of the U.S. Educated Sudanese Association. She tells BBC's Douglas Mpuga that the war in Sudan now is one of the worst human rights catastrophes in the world.
The situation in Sudan is absolutely out of hand, and it is one of the worst humanitarian catastrophes in the world right now. That doesn't mean that there's no solution possible. Of course there's a solution possible, but it requires political will and it requires adequate and sufficient pressure from the international community.
Talking of political will, the two belligerents have not been willing to resolve this issue, but now there are reports that the command of the Sudanese paramilitary rapid support forces has agreed to next month's ceasefire talks. Is there a way the international community can urge these parties to reach an agreement?
Well, Douglas, the two generals, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, who is the commander of the Sudanese armed forces and the de facto head of the Sovereign Council of Sudan, and his rival, General Hemeti, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, who's the commander of the RSF, the Rapid Support Forces paramilitary, neither one of them has been genuine or really wanted to find a solution to this war from day one. They're in a war to fight for political power, for economic power, and to escape accountability from possible persecution for current war crimes and past war crimes, including, the 2003-2005 Darfur genocide. So neither of them actually wants to find a solution to this war. The solution has to come from extreme pressure from the neighboring countries and the international community, unfortunately. And there are certain tools that can be used to put that pressure on.
How would you describe the impact to the citizens of the country, given that now there's a lack of medical facilities and people are maybe running out of food soon, according to UN agencies?
So the Sudanese people are dying from bullets, from bombings, from drone attacks. They're dying from hunger. They're dying from lack of medical attention. They're dying for all sorts of reasons. They're even dying from shock and trauma and from the sight of seeing family members being raped and being shot and their homes being looted and burned. And so there are direct ways that you can be a victim of the Sudanese war, and there are very indirect ways that you can be a victim of the Sudanese war.
That was Sama Salma, a Sudanese strategic analyst and president of the U.S. Educated Sudanese Association. She spoke with Douglas Mpuga from Virginia, USA. The Nigerian government held an emergency meeting on Wednesday in response to planned nationwide protests over governance issues and the cost of living. On Tuesday, authorities called on organizers to shelf the plans to lead what they say are Kenyan-style protests and urge citizens to be patient with the government. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Wednesday's emergency meeting comes a day after President Bola Tinubu made a public appeal through his information minister, Mohammed Idris Malagi, asking citizens not to go through with planned protests. More than 40 cabinet members attended the meeting, including the secretary to the government, the national security advisor, and ministers. Malagi told journalists after the meeting that authorities are working hard to address the grievances of the people, but that the government will need more time.
The issue of the planned protest, Mr. President does not see any need for that. He's asked them to shelve that plan. He's asked them to await government response to all their pleas. He has listened to them, like I said, and a lot is happening. The young people out there should listen to the president and allow the president more time to see to the realization of all the goodies he has for them.
The planned protests follow weeks of demonstrations in Kenya that were sparked by proposed tax hikes and outrage over high-level corruption. The demonstrations resulted in a tax hike bill being withdrawn and Kenyan President William Ruto dissolving his cabinet. As in Kenya, organizers of the planned Nigerian protests have been faceless, calling for the protests using online platforms like Instagram and X. In Nigeria, the main complaint concerns the soaring cost of living, which many Nigerians blame on government economic policies. President Tinubu last year scrapped a popular fuel subsidy and sharply devalued the local currency, the Naira, causing food and commodity prices to spiral upward. Nigeria's headline inflation is at its highest level in 28 years, more than 34%. Food inflation is much higher. To make matters worse, widespread insecurity and climate change are affecting the ability of farmers to grow food. Human rights activist Zaria Yusuf says the ruling All Progressives Congress APC party has been making empty promises for years.
What exactly would the government want time for, considering what they have done for the past decade or thereabout?
Violet. Many will be watching to see how authorities respond to demonstrations and whether the protests can change the policies of Nigeria's government. Timothy Obizu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Ghana's Supreme Court on Wednesday upheld a six-decade-old law criminalizing gay sex. This as the West African country awaits another court decision on whether to introduce even harsher penalties in a new bill. Reuters reports that the seven-member panel dismissed a lawsuit challenging the law, with Presiding Justice Pearl Bafo-Bani saying reasons for the decision will be given later. The Ghanaian Criminal Code of 1960 prohibits same-sex sexual acts, calling them unnatural, carnal knowledge. Offenders face up to 3 years in jail. Tearful crowds gather around a mud pit containing dead bodies on Wednesday as volunteers dug for survivors of landslides that have killed 229 people and displaced thousands more in southern Ethiopia. The French news agency said humanitarian agencies scramble to rush emergency relief aid to the stricken community after the deadliest such incident recorded in Ethiopia, a country highly vulnerable to climate-related disasters. And that is it for this Thursday, July 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butte in Washington, saying have a great day and please be safe whatever you do.
France is hosting the 2024 Olympics starting July 26th. Join VOA's Mike Hovey and Mokbelia Bro as they detail the thrilling sports event competition for gold. Catch their exclusive insight on VOA Africa podcast. Visit voaafrica.com to listen.
Hello, this is Linor Mudu, host of Health Chat. Join me for the latest in health news, wellness tips, medical breakthroughs, and much more. Our experts inside the United States and beyond will share some insights on living a healthy life. Tuesdays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA.
VOA Africa presents the latest news about Africa and the world and its news summaries. Africa in Brief airs every day at 400, 500 and 600 UTC. Give us 5 minutes of your time to be brought up to date. Africa in Brief, your trusted source for news.